You're in charge.
So, City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
So I understand we have a emergency ordinance held over from yesterday due to lack of a quorum. So do you want to read that item and we'll get rid of, we'll dispense with this right away?
1363, amend the comprehensive plan map designations and change zoning at vacant lot abutting 1130 Southwest 64th Avenue at the request of Mike and Pat Hartman, LU08103595CPZC.
I will say I have had a chance to review the records, though I wasn't here yesterday. Any other further discussion? Okay, Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Sure, this is to approve, to vote for the motion that would accept the hearings officer's recommendations, or is this on the zoning plat?
This is on the zoning map, right?
Okay, aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard. Saltzman.
Aye.
Okay, if you could please read the next item.
1364, authorize a ground lease agreement with Portland Hope Meadows for intergenerational housing at 4221 North Willis Boulevard.
Well, I have a opening statement I'd like to make, and then we'll have, I think, two invited panels, and then we'll open it up for testimony. 2 years ago, the City Council reserved the city-owned property, the former John Ball Elementary School, for the nonprofit Portland Hope Meadows. Portland Hope Meadows is an innovative program which will create an intergenerational community for families to adopt foster children and for seniors to become foster grandparents. Portland Hope Meadows will provide loving, stable, and permanent homes for our city's foster children. Children who are so desperately needing permanency to succeed in life. In Multnomah County alone, we have nearly 3,000 children in foster care every day. For the seniors who choose to live at Portland Hope Meadows, they will be rewarded with an enriched life and a supportive community. The resolution Council passed in 2006 set out certain conditions for Hope Meadows to accomplish, and they are here today to let Council know that they have met these conditions. Last year, Portland Hope Meadows turned into Council a financial plan for building the new community, and this year they returned to us with financial commitments to make Portland Hope Meadows a reality. So now I'd like to introduce the first invited panel, which consists of Dorinda Schubert, the Executive Director of Portland Hope Meadows, Ross Cornelius from Guardian Management, the developer of the project, and Chantel Monk, a supporter of Hope Meadows. Welcome.
Thank you.
We'll start with you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you so much for having us today. As Commissioner Salton stated, I am the Executive Director of Portland Hope Meadows, and I bring to this project experience as a clinical psychologist, a nonprofit administrator, and personally, I'm an adoptive parent and someone fortunate enough to grow up in an intergenerational family. We will be presenting to you our significant progress, and as we begin our presentation, we have a video. Pardon us.
All children need. Hello, I'm Oregon Governor Ted Kulikowski. All children need loving parents,
stable homes that help them flourish in school.
Carla. forgive us.
Hello, I'm Oregon Governor Ted Kulongoski. All children need loving parents and stable homes that help them flourish in school, obtain employment, and live healthy lives. Our foster care strives to achieve this every day for every child in our care. Portland Hope Meadows, with its new approach of bringing three generations together, has created an innovative way to help our foster care system achieve its mission. The unique intergenerational community addresses the needs of foster children who need to be adopted, families who need the extra support to parent children, and older adults who are looking for purpose in their lives. This is the essence of Portland Hope Meadows. The state of Oregon supports you in our shared mission, and on behalf of all Oregonians, I thank you for your care and concern for some of our most vulnerable citizens. I wish you much success.
As the governor stated, the essence of Portland Hope Meadows is really to bring together three generations to address and make significant impact in some of our most vulnerable citizens. The intergenerational community of Portland Hope Meadows is designed to provide adoptive homes for our children in foster care, provide our adoptive parents with support and services so that they will thrive, and provide our elders with an opportunity where they will be contributing in a meaningful way and that their wisdom and their presence and their experience will be valued. This is what we intend to do. At Portland Hope Meadows, the community will also benefit from our services and our community. Those benefits include building in a green manner so that the buildings will strive toward gold LEED qualification. We'll be sharing our intergenerational center where after-school activities and celebrations occur. When we have educational programs and social events, we intend to invite our neighbors. The neighbors and members of our community who serve children and elders have shared with all of us their endorsement of Portland Hope Meadows, and many of you have received letters of support from those entities. The children who will benefit from our organization are children in foster care whose lives have been so disruptive that they don't have a sense of stability or a sense of where home is. It is our intent to give them permanent, stable, adoptive homes so they know where they'll come after school, they know when after college will they go for their holiday season. They know that they're loved and cared for. Research has shown that by the Casey Family Program that when children are not adopted out of foster care, they're at risk for homelessness, poverty, unemployment, mental health disorders, and academic failure. Portland Hope Meadows intends to have a 90% adoption rate, just like our friends in Illinois at the original model, and a 100% high school graduation rate. The children will have their parents, their neighbors, their elders, and clinicians on staff to help them face their issues. Portland Hope Meadows will end the cycle of disruption in these children's lives so that they will have a bright future. The families will benefit from Portland Hope Meadows because they will be able to conduct affordable adoptions. Our clinicians will be on staff, their neighbors will be there who know what they're living through and be able to offer their moral support. The elders will be there to offer their wisdom and guidance. We'll provide ongoing post-adoption resources and support so that those families will thrive. The elders will benefit because they'll be living in a safe, nurturing, caring, affordable neighborhood. They will be involved in these kids' lives as well as the lives of the families. They will not be isolated and they will be valued. They will no longer feel put out to pasture, as some of them have remarked to us. As the model in Illinois has demonstrated, their health will stabilize and in some cases improve. They'll be involved every day with the youth because they're the ones who conduct the after-school program. So every day, somebody is watching over these children. I don't think these kids are going to get too far down the block without somebody knowing what they're up to, because there's going to be so many eyes watching them. This intergenerational model is not that new. The idea that three generations come together, we have two here in the audience, three generations come together and support one another is common around the country and around the world in many cultures. We're suggesting to use it to help some of our most vulnerable citizens. The Portland Hope Meadows community will consist of housing for our elders, housing for our families, an intergenerational center, gardens, coordination of after-school activities and recreational activities, counseling services, consultation services, and property maintenance service. We'd like to now turn to funding. It's notable that in the year of 2008, we received some wonderful gifts from some very prestigious foundations in our community. The Collins Foundation, the Annabelle Swindells Charitable Trust, and the Meyer Memorial Trust Fund have all offered their support to Portland Hope Meadows. We'd like to now go in detail about our funding plan, our financing plan, and I'd like to turn this discussion over to my colleague, Mr. Ross Cornelius from Guardian Management.
Thank you, Dorinda. First of all, I'd just like to say it's a real privilege to be involved in this project. The company that I represent, Guardian Management, has been in Portland for over 35 years. We manage over 12,000 units of rental property, and this is probably the most exciting project that I've seen come along in the time that I've been with them. We manage property in a way that helps enhance the community, and we'll do a good job of making sure that this project is well managed. I've had the opportunity to work with the team as they have gone about accumulating the resources to get the project built. And in the pie chart, you can see here, we have a variety of funding sources, which seems to be the standard for the way projects of this type wind up getting financed. There's been an awful lot of effort and successful work done to raise foundation and individual support, over $1.7 million to date and counting. We are, as Dorinda mentioned, pursuing a LEED Gold level of sustainability in the project, and there are some funds available that we've identified for that, and we're pursuing others. We have talked to local banks who have expressed their interest in loaning money to the project, and we have sized that loan based on the capacity of the project to create income. We have additional asks out to foundations and other individuals and entities of over $3.7 million based on our success rate to date of getting over 50% success rate on the asks that we've made. We anticipate another about $1.8 to $2 million coming in from those proposals that are outstanding. And we are identifying equity from an investor in low-income housing tax credits, which would be applied to a portion of the project to round out the equity. And then the other sources mentioned include the land lease, the fee waiver program that the city currently has for affordable housing, deferred developer fee, and fundraising events on the part of the organization. So we feel that we've got a solid funding plan and a very robust ability to go forward on the project now based on our work to date.
Good afternoon. My name is Chantel Monk, and I've been in foster care for 8 years. When I first entered foster care, I felt neglected and lonely. I didn't have anyone. Most importantly, I didn't have anyone to love. That is hard for a child to deal with when she's 10 years old. That is why Hope Meadows will be a great program to have. They will have parents, elders, volunteers, and staff members to love the foster children and support them. It is important for foster children to have love, support, and a stable place to stay. I'm not sure if you know that Hope Meadows' goal is to keep the foster children until they turn 18 and go off to college. That is something that is unusual for foster children. They are moved very often. So to have someone keep a foster child that long is great and very beneficial for the foster child. Hope Meadows will close the dropout rate amongst foster children. There are too many foster children not succeeding and not sure what's going to happen next in our life. Hope Meadows will provide foster children with answers. They will not have to worry about life because they will have family that will provide a safe environment for them. It is time for children to be children, and they shouldn't have to worry about where they're going to live. Their worry should be about who they're going to go to the dance with or who's going to win the next game between the Blazers and the Nuggets. Hope Meadows will give foster children the life we all want our children to live. We want our youth to be stable and successful. The youth are our future leaders, and Hope Meadows is providing future leaders for the world. Please help Hope Meadows provide resources to foster children. It is a win-win situation for everyone, especially to the world, because we will have more positive leaders, and to the foster children, because they will have a family in love.
Thank you very much, all of you.
Thank
Are there
you.
Questions?
I have a question. Thank you for your testimony. Very compelling. I think some of the testimony we're going to hear is raising a question of whether there's been enough hard money raised to really begin construction. I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to that concern.
I think the original intent was to come to you with a committed funding plan. In order to advance further on turning the commitments and the sources we've identified into commitments, we require site control. In order to apply for the tax credits, we need to have show that we are in control of the site. The lenders will need to know that we have site control, and other funders. So they are looking at us positively and saying, yes, we're ready to stand behind you. If you can show that you actually have the site, then we're there. So we are looking forward to action on the part of the committee council here soon to identify that so that we can turn around to those sources and confirm their commitment.
So how much of the how much of the hope for turns to commitment before you start turning dirt?
I'm sorry, could you?
How much do you need to have raised before you feel comfortable beginning construction?
Well, we've got 1.8 committed. We have 3.7, and I think we've got higher than that now, 3.7 million out. As I mentioned, we've had a really good success rate of landing those proposals into commitments. So we anticipate, actually I've been pretty conservative, I think I hope in my estimates, we should see more than half of that coming back to us. So when that comes, we'll be funded.
So the amount you need to raise is, forgive me, capital is how much?
Well, the total project cost is about $11.1
million. Okay.
And that's what we're aiming to raise.
And then in terms of the other concern that's been expressed, and I think we'll hear later, is that the ongoing operations, the ongoing financial mm-hmm. aspects of the operations, give us some sense of how you're going to sustain that, if you would.
The funding streams for when we are operational include the following: rental income, a contract with the Department of Human Services, fundraising, and foundations. We anticipate that we will continue to be successful with our fundraising. We've had very successful events since 2006 where we have either met or exceeded our expectations in all of those fundraising events. And that's without having a program to walk people through and without having our buildings built. We anticipate that when those things happen, our fundraising will continue to excel. We are currently negotiating with the Department of Human Services for our operating agreement.
And what's the deadline of expectations for raising the money to begin the work, the capital money?
Right. We are anticipating going in on a tax credit application to the state in February of 2009. Assuming that was successful, we would be looking to complete our drawings and permitting for a start of construction late third quarter or early fourth quarter of 2009. And we anticipate that if the tax credit application comes through, we will be able to line up the rest of the funding here and go. I think there's been a question about, well, what happens if that doesn't come through? Our alternative is to continue on a different path that's non-competitive, and we have a good plan for filling out the financing with a bond tax credit model that doesn't require an application to the state, a competitive application.
Okay, thanks. Mr.
Fish? First, I want to welcome Chantel Monk. And she's a senior at De La Salle North Catholic High School. And it's just a pleasure to meet you today. And I want to tell you how proud I am that you're the new liaison to my office from the Multnomah Youth Commission. And how about a round of applause for this young lady?
Thank you.
And we're eager to get to work with you, so it's nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice meeting you, too.
Ross, I have a couple of questions following up on what Commissioner Adams asked. The competitive tax credits that you alluded to that you're going to go out for, the 9% tax credits, and they are very hotly sought. There's a lot of projects in Portland that also are seeking them. Describe for us a little bit the backup plan and your confidence level about getting either or both.
I should say that the 9% applications are the competitive ones. We are coming in with a very modest application. We're not looking for the entire project to be under tax credit. We're actually trying to minimize the amount of credit asked that we have to the state. We think that increases the likelihood or the possibility of getting funded that way and allows opportunities for other projects in the city also to get funded because we know there's a lot of need. So we tried to keep that very modest. We originally approached the project using a non-competitive tax credit and bond model. My company does a lot of those issuances, and the size of this project allows us to amalgamate that with other projects that we have to do an efficient offering. We've been encouraged to take a look at a modest 9% application, but our fallback clearly would be a non-competitive 4% application with bonds, and we're very confident that we could do that as well if required.
So if someone read the paper today or been following the news in the last month or so, they know that the credit markets are upside down. Municipalities throughout the land are deferring going out in the bond market. There's some uncertainty. Talk to us about the timing under which you might seek to go out on financing of this kind and how it might impact be impacted by market conditions.
Of the latter?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I actually was talking to investors back east here recently this week, and they're trying to figure it out. It's certainly going to be a tumultuous time that we're going through. We have time. We have the ability to continue our fundraising efforts and to wait for the bond market. We are confident the bond market will be there. It's going to be there for us and for the rest of the country at some point after it stabilizes. We're not looking to go to the bond market now. We don't have to go now. As I mentioned, our schedule has us third or fourth quarter of 2009 closing, and we anticipate by that time things will be stable. Should we have to?
We all hope so.
Yeah, we hope so, exactly. We hope we'd anticipate at that point being able to go to the bond market for that financing if required.
I had a chance to look at your pro forma, and we had a chance to have some folks at the Bureau of Housing and Community Development take a hard look at your numbers. And I have a couple of questions off the pro forma. As you sit here today, do you currently anticipate making an ask for any public dollars to close any gaps?
We're hopeful that the proposals that we have outstanding will be successful and that we will come in and not require that. We don't know. It's possible that we might. We haven't sat down with PDC or BHCD and asked and made any ask at this point. We haven't anticipated needing to do that. We anticipate being able to have the funding that we need. However, if our projections come to the point that we need to come in and take a look at all sources, we would certainly look at that as one opportunity. But we, at this point, are running independent of that and hope to continue that way unless we need to go and ask.
Finally, I have some questions that have to do with the proposed contract and some contractual timelines, but I understand there's a panel later that I can address those to,
right.
So I'll hold those questions.
We'll have Shannon Callahan from my office come up and address any questions about the lease
Thank you.
Particulars.
So could I follow up on questions about design, or is that a different panel? Or
No, this would be the point.
Talk to us about, they're up here, so, you know, talk to us about, is this what you have planned, or, you know, how firm is this design we're looking at?
These are our conceptual drawings at this time that will evolve as we receive more input and during our land use process. And I think I'd like our architect, Brian Carlton, to join us for this portion of the questioning.
Come on up, Brian. You can pull up a chair. Or
can I just shout? Do I need to be in the
microphone? Yeah, you should be near the microphone.
Okay.
Yeah.
My name is Brian Carlton with Carlton Art Architecture. I'd like to come back to Commissioner Adams' question very directly. These are conceptual drawings. They certainly reflect the program we're trying to achieve with this project, but we intend to and are beginning a full engagement with the neighborhood and anticipate a lot of feedback from them, and there will be modifications over time. We've had a pre-application conference with planning department and are poised to start that process, but we realize we still have some work with the neighborhood to do. The concept is to ring the site with family-style homes. We have 8 family homes in single-family and duplex arrangements. Then we have 4 other structures at this point that are accommodating 3 senior homes wrapped around some community space within those structures. And then our larger intergenerational center, which has 20 senior homes, as well as the larger community spaces, dining room, kitchen, laundry, activity spaces.
The emphasis on making it look, especially from the outside, sort of blending in with the rest of the neighborhood is, I think, important to the neighborhood, important to me. So I was glad to hear you say that. Given the nature of your endeavor, is community outside of the development, are there amenities for the neighborhood, or is that not? Are there safety issues related to that, or sort of what's been your thinking of the physical development and how? What assets, what benefits to the neighborhood might be achieved?
I'm going to go back to that we're intending to have a lot of discussions with the neighborhood over those issues. We are clearly trying to develop a neighborhood within a neighborhood, a community within the larger community. And our kids have, you know, special needs, some of them, and we're trying to pay some really close attention to them. And so we are looking at a community space within our own development here that offers them some sense of home and comfort. That being said, these are normal kids that are going to bring home kids from school and want to have places to play with their friends. And we're certainly encouraging that. There are other discussions that have just begun about opening our site up more. We're going to take a very hard look at that, and we're going to continue working with the neighborhood to see how we can open the site up more and let a little bit more of the neighborhood into our site.
And then the last question around design for the moment is green and sustainability.
It's early in the game, but we are at this point targeting LEED Gold. We're going to be exploring. We have the advantage of a community. We get to do some things when we're sharing resources that single-family homes might not get to do. We have a lot of green space. We have room for vegetable gardens and rainwater harvesting and that kind of fun stuff. We're going to be exploring certain renewable energy resources that we can take advantage of on site.
District heating, cooling, or?
Heating, cooling, electrical generation, rainwater harvesting. We're going to try to touch it all.
Thank you. Brian, I have a question. You're the lead architect for another development that was before council recently, and that's the Jerome Sears site in Southwest. Mm-hmm. And you indicated in connection with that process that Community Partners for Affordable Housing, which is the lead nonprofit, had committed to engaging the public in a very dynamic way in terms of the evolution of the design. Have you been given the same charge in this regard from your client and this project?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think my client up to this point, my client has been very engaged with the neighborhood over the last 2 years, 3 years on this project, and that's certainly going to continue. I have to admit, we've been carting around these renderings for quite a while now. There hasn't been a lot of evolution of those because, quite frankly, the efforts have been in the funding arena and taking care of other business. We've been dabbling with evolutions of the design as it relates to program, but this client is fully committed to once we've got the site control and the green light is there, to fully engaging with the neighborhood and going through a design process with them that is more than just showing them the product and having them throw darts at it, but actually sitting down with them and talking about aspects of the project and how the site layout and how the home design can really benefit the neighborhood.
Any other questions of this panel? Thank you all.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to invite up Tom Molfler, a North Portland business owner, Dan Snow of Walsh Construction, the contractor of the project, and Nick Mucci, a neighbor of the project. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom, you want to start?
I just want to first thank you for taking this issue up. And
you could just identify yourself also.
Tom Molfler. I own a company called Mount Hood Solutions, who's was been in Portland since 1902. Was born and raised here, and I'm a businessman who likes to support the city of Portland and the projects that people get involved in that I really think are worthwhile. And to that end, I'm involved in this with Hope Meadows. And I guess that
can you move a little? Can you speak closer to the microphone?
Sure. The point for me being here is really to just express support for this project. I've been involved in a fair number of charitable and projects similar to this that have been very successful, and some that haven't been very successful. And I think this has the bones to be very successful. The concept, I don't think anybody can really argue with, that we have a lot of children, foster children, who need some sort of support beyond what is being offered them today, which I think it's hard to argue that it hasn't been very successful, that it's easy to argue that it's not been very successful, the projects and the programs we've had to date. And I've seen this one, I've seen the one in Chicago, and I really believe in it, and I've committed my own dollars to it. And I just look at it as somebody who grew up here, that anytime we can take a project on like this that's really not asking for a lot from the public, I believe that to be true. I can't sit here and factually say that, but it doesn't seem to me like it's a big draw in the public, and there's a lot of private money behind it, that we ought to support that. And if we can do that and help these kids that direly need it, I don't see why we wouldn't, but everybody has their opinion, so that's...
Thank you. That's what I'm here for. Dan?
Yep. My name is Dan Snow. I'm with Walsh Construction. I'll be the project manager for this project. And I just want to say that Walsh Construction works with a lot of nonprofit organizations all over the Pacific Northwest. And we think this project is really a great project that is just great for the community. And I think Dorinda and this group of people is going to be a great project. So all I really want to say is we have a strong history of building projects, two budgets, and on schedule and a high quality project. And I think there's a lot of consternation about the dollars and how they're going to be spent, and we will ensure that this project does get built to the budget and on schedule, that people will be happy with. It'll be a high quality project, fit in with the neighborhood. We'll be a member of the team that works with the neighborhood, and also we'll bring in the community to help build the project. We have, again, a strong history of including targeted businesses and small business in the local communities to help build the project. So we're just excited to be involved, and we'll do our part to make sure it happens.
Thank you. Nick.
Hi, my name is Nick Mucci. I currently live across the street from the site, the corner of Wayland and Hunt. I'm a little nervous, not used to this arena. I typically try to avoid, kind of keeps my blood pressure down. So, but when I first heard about Hope Meadows, I contacted Dorenda and asked her if we could go out for coffee and just kind of talk about it. And as she shared with the goals of this project, it was something that really kind of touched my heart and touched something that I'm a big fan of. My wife and I have both worked with students, elementary school and high school students, for the last few years. My wife for the last three is an elementary school teacher, and then five for me in a youth center as an employee and as a volunteer. And we both had opportunities to work with foster care kids. I had two sisters in the youth center I worked at who were eventually adopted. One just graduated from high school this past year and is going to college. And my wife had a fourth grade boy who he and his twin brother were constantly bouncing back and forth between grandpa and foster care. Grandpa just wasn't able to take care of him. And my wife would always talk about just how when there was a level of stability, his attitude would change in the classroom. And then when he found out that grandpa wasn't going to be able to take him anymore and they were going to be moved again, his whole demeanor changed in the classroom, and it broke my wife's heart just to see how he had improved during the time with his grandfather to the time where the fact that he didn't know where he was going to be going to school next week just kind of blew it up. He was attempting to control the one thing he thought he had control of, and that was in school, and resulted in all kinds of things. But I'm here as a neighbor, as a fan of helping out kids who desperately need help, who aren't able to help themselves. I look forward to seeing houses across the street as opposed to the vacant lot at this point. I look forward to the day when my wife and I might have kids someday soon and some nice babysitters across the street, which would be great. So I'm a big fan of anything that has the potential to help kids who desperately need it, and I believe that this project has that. So.
Thanks. Question?
It's my understanding that the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association has taken a position against the lease, and I appreciate you coming here today. This room used to make me nervous too. Some days it still does.
Does that have anything to do with the proximity of Commissioner Leonard?
I fear for my life. That's why security's here. It's really not to protect us from you. It's from us from Randy. But it obviously you live right across the street. The Portsmouth Neighborhood Association has taken a vote not supporting us, approving this lease, and we'll have an opportunity to hear from them. But I wanted to sort of see if you had any thoughts on, or you've explained why you're supporting it and their concerns, if you're familiar with their concerns, sort of any response to them.
I'm familiar vaguely in the times that I've read online the proposal that they presented in opposition to it. I just truly believe that if there is an opportunity to help kids, I'm willing to throw myself behind that, no matter what risks are or what it could be. I think that takes priority over any of the other objections that I personally have against whatever would be in my neighborhood. That kind of trumps that for me personally. So that's why. That's why, regardless of the different things that could affect me personally, that I definitely support this.
Thank you.
If I may, Dan, one comment about Walsh Construction, and this is not germane to this project, but
I wanted to say this 4 years ago, but I didn't get a chance because you were nominated for a Spirit of Portland Award, which for some unfathomable reason you didn't get. But now that I'm on the council, point of privilege, I would just like to say that about 4.5 years ago, an elementary school in this neighborhood called Astor Elementary School, the parents decided they wanted a community water garden, and they wanted to run all the stormwater into the garden and create a sustainable place. And they did not have the money to do it. And they made an outreach to Walsh Construction. You folks, within 48 hours, agreed to do it. You came, you took all the blacktop off the basketball court. You dug out this trench. You created a water garden. You then took the material, recycled it, and paved the roads of the new Columbia. Invested a tremendous amount of time and energy, which you donated to Astor Elementary School, and you created a model water garden. And I just want to say, then as a citizen and now as a commissioner, how grateful I am. And I know that this is something you do regularly, but I wanted to make sure people knew that that's the kind of work that Walsh Construction does regularly for our community, and we're very appreciative.
Well, thank you. To be honest with you, I was the kind of one that did that, and I had forgotten all about that. So I should go over and check it out. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Okay, thank you. The last invited panel is Tony Hobson, president of Self Enhancement, Inc., Tamala Newsom, the principal of Rosa Parks Elementary, and Shannon Callahan of my staff, who will review some of the community aspects of the proposed lease agreement. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tony, give us your name for the record.
Tony Hobson, President and CEO of Self Enhancement, Inc. I think my role here would be really to kind of talk about this from the youth side, since that's what I'm known best for. But and before I go there, I would say there's a thing that I say all the time about youth in America and the fact that we don't have a youth problem in America, but an adult problem in America. And what we mean by that is that, you know, kids learn from what they see as opposed to what we say. So this is a model that is intergenerational, that brings the older folks along with parents and young people together. So from that standpoint, I think the model will serve us well. But in terms of need, there is some real urgency that we all are faced with right now. We could look at some of the dropout rates around this country as well as here locally. You know, Detroit with a 29% graduation rate, Indianapolis, Indiana, 30%, Cleveland, Ohio, 34%, Portland Public Schools, 54% graduation rate. Now, those aren't real good, and they're talking about all the kids. Now, if we start talking about kids of color, then those numbers get far worse. If we start talking about foster care children, it's even more worse. Then think about foster care children who are kids of color. Man, do they graduate at all? You know, the numbers get very, very, very low. In our community, Native Americans make up 1.7% of Multnomah County, but 12.4% of the foster care system. Hispanic, 6.2%, Multnomah County, 14.1% of foster care. African Americans, 5.8%, Multnomah County, 7% of foster care. Obviously, there's a major issue right there that we need to be concerned about. This is a program that in and of itself can't make the huge differences that we want to see. But if this program is connected back to the schools and connected to other community-based programs, then we can begin to wrap kids around or wrap a holistic approach around kids that can help them be successful. Beyond that, I think what's most important when I look at programs, we look at it from the standpoint of what, how, and who. Who, how, and what. What is it that they're going to do? Obviously, we have a model here that's proven to be very successful. How will they do it? With a lot of love and building a lot of relationships. But I think the most important thing to having success is the who. You know, who is involved in this effort? And I think we have a lot of very strong people involved in this effort that have proven to be successful in their own right. Duranda as the executive director, obviously Rhonda Meadows, who has pushed this through, There's individuals in the audience now, Jay Bloom, that's on the board, who certainly brings a lot of expertise when you think about young people in this community. Mark Young, who's involved with this, who was the CEO of YMCA Columbia Willamette. Carolyn Besick has been involved with this, who runs Oregon Mentors. These are people that are fairly dependable. So I think when I think about how do you have success, I mean, you have a good model. You come up with a way in which your how is going to be relationship-oriented, which makes all the difference. And then you get the right who involved. So when I think about the work that we do and our connectedness to young people, I think that this is a program that can certainly serve us and serve us in a very positive way. We have a number of foster care children in our program in Self-Enhancement, Inc., and they do get passed around. To have a home situation like this that would be available for young people is certainly a step in the right direction. I can't sit here and argue the money side of this, but on the need side for young people, absolutely no question, this is a program that can make a difference.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Tamala Newsom, principal of Rosa Parks, which is, of course, the city's newest school and the brightest gem. And we are happily located in New Columbia, but more importantly, North Portland. The last time I came here to address the commissioners and the city council, I came as a citizen, as an adoptive mom, and as an adoptee. Today I come to you as a principal of Rosa Parks Elementary. And as the principal of Rosa Parks, I can tell you that we serve a variety of students and a variety of families. I can also tell you our families are very complex, from two-parent homes to single families to single parents to grandparents to extended family. And last but definitely not least, our foster care families. Regular foster care, therapeutic foster care. Rosa Parks is privileged to serve a variety of families, very diverse, more than 17 languages spoken, and our children represent a variety of ethnic groups, color, and we are just happy to have such a positive place for children to grow. But I especially want to tell you about a little girl who just is near and dear to my heart. And I think this story sums it up best when we talk about Hope Meadows and what it has to offer to the children in our community. This little girl showed up at 5 years old. And well, I'll put it to you this way. On her first day, we all knew that she was there. She was in our special class. And as we found out a little bit more about her, we found out she had just been placed in foster care, that she had come from a very troubled home situation, very abusive, and she and her siblings had been removed. Not only were they removed, but they were split up. And so we had two in one home, one in another, and yet one in another home. I didn't really have a lot of hope, and I'm not one to give up easily on children, but the damage seemed to be so intense and so deep that I wondered what it would take to help this little girl recover and begin to heal. Well, she landed in the right place because she landed at Rosa Parks. She landed in the classroom with a wonderful teacher and wonderful support staff. And I do mean the whole school embraced her, from the secretaries to nutrition services to assistants, educational assistants, paraprofessionals. And of course, the principal, we loved her. But she also landed in a wonderful foster home with two parents to love and care for her and one of her siblings. And I'm just overwhelmed today to tell you that as a six-year-old and as a first grader, she is thriving and she is still at Rosa Parks and she is strong. And in just a few, probably within 2 weeks, we will begin to mainstream her from a special class to a regular ed class. It is simply a testimony of what the right place, the right time, and the right people can do for these children. We have an obligation. And had I not landed myself in the right home, in the right place, at the right time, I wouldn't be sitting here today. So I simply want to leave you with this thought. The Rosa Parks stands ready to welcome once again, new families and new children to our community. We did it with New Columbia, and we're over 500 children strong, and we are doing well. And we can surely open up and find enough room in our hearts and our building to embrace these children that will come to us as a result of Hope Meadows standing on grounds that has served children as Ball Elementary did for more than 50 years. Thank you.
I'm Shannon Callahan of Commissioner Saltzman's office. I'll give just a brief overview of some of the points of the lease and then talk about some of the community benefits that have been incorporated into the lease. First of all, the property, we've limited the use of the property to the Hope Meadows model in the lease. If for any reason in the future Hope Meadows would cease to exist, and I know there was some concern of the neighborhood that this may be some other use, the lease actually becomes void. And the property and the buildings revert back to the city. Secondly, we also have two clauses in there that OML will review all of the finances before any construction is to commence, and from time to time OMF can request. OMF is actually going to be the landlord under this under the lease. So OMF will actually verify all funds before construction commences, and also will verify that Hope Meadows has the necessary operating reserve account for maintenance, which obviously will need to grow over time as the buildings age. But so there's a kind of a financial check piece. In terms of the actual community benefits, Dorinda Schubert, the executive director, has been having many conversations in the community itself, and the Neighborhood Association, even despite their formal opposition, graciously allowed me to come and talk about provisions in the lease that they may like to see. A few weeks ago, and we were able to incorporate the vast majority of those. Some of the other issues are actually going to be dealt with in the land use process, as this is going through a conditional use process at the same time. One of the first things I'd like to point out is that the Intergenerational Community Center will be open at no charge to the Portsmouth neighborhood for events and meetings, as well as school and community groups. That's a provision that was added into the lease. The playground and rest of the open space is also actually considered public open space, as long as that's consistent with the terms of the Good Neighbor Agreement that Portland Hope Meadows enters into with the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association. One of the things that was most helpful from the meeting were specific provisions to incorporate that must be addressed in a Good Neighbor Agreement. This lease requires Portland Hope Meadows to enter into and maintain a Good Neighbor Agreement, addressing certain conditions with the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association. Otherwise, they put their lease in jeopardy. Some of those things were very important to people were tenant conduct and also attendance at Portsmouth Neighborhood Association meetings by representatives of Portland Hope Meadows on a continual basis. The other piece that I think is really interesting is that Hope Meadows is guaranteed that they're going to work with the crime prevention through environmental design program here at the city. That was another request of the neighbors. So those are some of the many features that we've incorporated into the lease, and also that they are mandated to use green building. I don't know if you had any questions.
Mr. Fish has a couple questions.
Shannon, I'd like to just have you walk us through some of the timelines within the lease.
Okay.
So, first of all, what's the outside time limit to complete construction under this agreement?
60 months from the time the lease is executed. So, it's like 5 years or 60 months, which seems like a long time, but because of the land use process that's ongoing right now and the possibility of appeals through a land use process, we need to build in enough time for that to actually commence and be complete. But otherwise, the lease is void. So they've got 5 years to complete this project, or this lease doesn't stand anymore, and the property reverts back to the city.
So when you talk about the lease is void, which you've done a couple of times, that means it reverts to the city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's the timeline for the filing of an application to obtain a conditional use permit?
Portland Hope Meadows started the conditional use process with the pre-application, pre-development application in July of this year. We have made sure that they finish that application by July of next year. That's actually the code, but we don't want them to stop on this process. We want them to continue on that process. So they will have the formal plans into BDS by July of 2009.
And what happens within the 5 years if at some point the Hope Meadows board determines they simply cannot obtain the necessary financing?
Hope Meadows actually could terminate the lease during that time period, if that's the case. And we can also request that periodically. We being the city and OMF can request financial reports from them periodically throughout the life of the lease, including before construction commences.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you all. Now we're going to turn to testimony. I understand the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association would like to have 10 minutes to present its position. Is that true? Is Greg Wilhelm here? Okay. So come on up, and whoever you want to have with you. I would assume without objection, we will give them 10 minutes to make their presentation. So would you like to maybe each introduce yourself first, and then did you have it all? Yeah.
Yes, as soon as I can get the PowerPoint up, we have our names on here. My name is Greg Wilhelm. I'm the current Portsmouth Neighborhood Association chair, and today I'm joined by Susan Landauer, who's a board member, and I also am joined by Ryan Shira, who's also a board member. And we're here to provide testimony opposing the Portland Hope Meadows lease. Before I get into my presentation, I would just like to say that this really isn't an issue about foster care. I don't think anyone in the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association feels badly about trying to help out foster children. I myself am adopted, so I do have an appreciation for what it means to be an adopted individual. But being a neighbor that lives one block south of the proposed site, I do, and looking at all the information that we've had presented to us, I'm here today along with my neighborhood association to oppose the granting of this property to Portland Hope Meadows. And what we're going to do today in our presentation is we're going to show that there was a lack of neighborhood involvement in the process in which Portland Hope Meadows was given a $1.9 million piece of property. And since I'm the Portsmouth representative on ICARAC, the Interstate Urban Corridor Action or Advisory Committee, I'm pretty familiar with what it feels like to be involved with PDC projects, and I can assure you that this project does not have that same feeling. We're also going to show that Portland Hope Meadows has not raised enough hard money for construction. And last, we're going to show that Portland Hope Meadows' business model for ongoing operation seems destined to fail. So the key takeaway from this is that the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association would like very much to work with City Council to find a more suitable use of the land at the John Ball School site. So I'm going to take some time and go over a little bit of history regarding the lack of the Portsmouth neighborhood involvement. First of all, City Council adopted back in 2003 a resolution that says that they will encourage neighborhood participation in decisions that affect the redevelopment of vacant surplus government properties. This never happened with the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association. What did happen in February of 06 is that Commissioner Saltzman came to a Portsmouth neighborhood community meeting and declared that the Ball School was closing and that he proposed using the property for Portland Hope Meadows. At the time, he did not give the PNA an opportunity to propose alternate uses for the site, nor did he mention that other sites had been vetted in the process as being not suitable and that this site was the best. Later, 2 months later, the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association held a community meeting to ask our neighbors what we wanted to do with the site. And at this meeting, the founder of Portland Hope Meadows was present. The P&A then went around the proposed site and surveyed 40 residents. And when we came back with the survey, we found that Portland Hope Meadows was the seventh